This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Thursday, which means it's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, where we talk to Northwest Indiana media members to find out their stories in print as well as online. Today, we will have Greg Tejeda from the Post Tribune with us to talk about the stories that he's covered. A lot of them involve the Gary Common Council. And a little later, we'll also talk with Carol Carlson from the Post Tribune. She has a number of stories we'll get caught up on as well, too, and some of them involve school boards around the region. In between, we'll bring you special reports from Sharon Jackson about Money Smart Week coming up, as well as a very special report about the 50th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's speech in Indianapolis. This is Regionally Speaking, Reporters Roundtable Thursday here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte, and let's start off with what's happening in the city of Gary these days. Greg Tejeda is a reporter who covers the Gary Common Council and other issues in the city of Gary for the Post Tribune. And as always, Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, first, let's start out here from some of the things that the Gary Common Council has talked about lately. In particular, they are concerned about having to come up with short-term loans all the time. Tell us the situation behind that. And what the Common Council has been most concerned about?
Well, the Council this week approved an ordinance. They're getting what they're calling interfund loans. They're mm-hmm. going to be juggling money around to ensure that they've got enough money to pay the bills for the general fund, the payroll, meet the payroll and the health insurance benefits for the next few months. The idea being that when the city actually gets its share of the property tax revenues, when they actually get the money in hand around July, they'll be able to repay these short-term loans. Basically, they're trying to work it so they can get the money now that they would be expecting in a few months so that they can manage to keep going.
Well, how
they're going to be cut. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say how they seem to work these short-term loans out.
Well, they're juggling this one around. They're taking money from the from one of the TIF districts that they have that's supposed to be raising money along the lakefront.
Mm-hmm.
Also from the wheel tax, their share of the money that they that's intended for the road repairs they're going to be using for the loan, and then we'll eventually repay the wheel tax fund. And they're also going to be taking a little bit of money from the fire and police pension funds that they are insisting will be repaid by the middle of the year. We're talking a total of like $3.12 million for the next few months.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know they got through, I guess, with a nearly unanimous vote. I guess there was only one council member who cast a dissenting vote, but I know that it's not a popular item and with many of the council members, I understand.
One council member voted against it, saying she considers it totally irresponsible, particularly since they've been doing this year after year. It's been going on for the last 7 years at least, according to the mayor.
Yeah.
But there were several other council members who made it clear they weren't pleased with that. Mm. However, the others insisted that they have to do this. They're just until they can stabilize the tax base, get more businesses to come into Gary, get more residents to come into Gary, they're going to be running into these shortfalls, and they're going to be juggling their money around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand too that we've been talking here before our conversation began here about some of the things that the Common Council has been doing lately, and I guess one of the things is been up on the discussion table for quite some time is about adding another fire station in the city of Gary. Where's the Common Council standing on that right now?
On Tuesday of this week, they approved a measure that rezoned a plot of land at 48th and Delaware. Mm-hmm. Which is going to be the site of the new 7th District Firehouse in Gary. They mm-hmm. are going ahead and build this. You know, by their own admission, they've been having to close stations in the past, having to cut back, and it's gotten to the point where they need to, if they're going to keep maintaining an adequate fire department, they need to upgrade, they need to move forward to facilities. So, yes, mm-hmm. there is going to be a new station. They're talking about wanting to start construction by May, and they're hoping it will be done by the summer of next year.
Has it gotten to a point where I guess that, of course, the city has shrunk in size, maybe not physically, but certainly in population over the years, and they just realize that they've got to have the new stations to either replace the old buildings or at least to handle these areas where the people are staying right now?
Exactly. And part of it is they've been relying on all their inter-department agreements with surrounding municipalities, and in some cases it's been those surrounding municipalities that have been having to come into parts of Gary to provide fire service. So, you know, if they're going to maintain their part of the agreement, they got to have at least a certain amount of facilities. And they're talking about building a fairly nice one at this particular site.
That'd be great. That'd be great to hear.
They're actually talking about one that supposedly will be unique and that will be designed with specific living quarters for male and female firefighters, you know, instead of having to make makeshift arrangements.
No, no more remodeling, I guess, to be able to provide the extra space for the other staffers, huh? That's interesting. Okay. One of the other topics I know that came up here at council, and if you mentioned in your stories here in the Post Tribune, is a council committee that is trying to work out a deal about towing in the city of Gary. Tell us about that.
That was the big quarrel Monday night at the City Hall. Representatives of the various towing companies that do business with Gary were all showing up. They're outraged. They don't like the fact that they're being asked to pay a certain chunk of the fee they collect back to the city for the right to do the business. The way it works now, somebody gets their, there's different rates, but you know, if you're talking for the standard motorist, you know, whether just a regular automobile, if you, your car gets towed in Gary, you have to go to the police station and pay a $50 fee up front for what they call a release, well, a release form, which in which the police indicate that yes, you have paid. And they can, you then take that release form to the towing company, and they will supposedly give you your car back after you pay another $175, of which the towing company is supposed to give 40 of that back to the city, which means the city ultimately is supposed to get $90 for every car that gets towed and is recovered. The towing companies are claiming that that just amounts to too much money. They're not getting enough. It's not worth the hassle, because in some cases people, when their car gets towed, they react very badly, so they can even react violently. One towing company said flat out he's not going to put his workers on the line for $200. That was him rounding off the figure. That wasn't a precise figure.
Yeah.
The idea being it's just not worth it. The city, of course, is taking the attitude that if they want to do business with the city, they need to provide, and they also make the argument that in 60% of cases, people, when their cars get towed, never try to recover them.
Wow.
In some cases, these are abandoned vehicles, and as a result, nobody's ever getting any money for these, and ultimately, they've got to be scrapped and for whatever little value they can get. And another interesting figure, this one is being tossed up by a city, by attorneys for the city of Gary, claiming that in up to 90% of the cases where cars are towed, it's because some crime was committed or there was some sort of accident and the police are having a clear scene. It's not like, as they put it, innocent people are not getting their cars randomly towed. You know, there's usually some more serious incident, which in many cases is why so many people don't try to recover their cars.
Well, that might explain, you know, why they have so many abandoned vehicles, then, I guess, if they happen to be if some kind of carjacking of some kind, not necessarily with anybody in the car, but somebody just steals the car to commit a crime, and it's, you know, they're going to drop it off wherever they want to drop it off.
Anyway, they're trying to resolve this whole issue. They revised their towing incident 2 years, ordinance 2 years ago in Gary. Tried reforming it again last autumn, and now they're still fighting over this issue. And the sad thing is all the towing companies, their contracts with the city have actually expired, and the city claims they can't even start to try to renew anybody, any contract, renegotiate anything, until they get this ordinance resolved, which is taking on a life of its own. Next week, they're supposed to come back for another committee hearing, at which supposedly the towing companies will provide a detailed list of all the expenses that are incurred, that they incurred, justify why you think you need all this money. Why does it have to be so expensive to
Car
back
here? We're just going to have to wait until the story comes out in the Post Tribune and see what you come up with on this too, and whatever develops in the city of Gary about this. And we thought all the problems with corruption and problems with towing services in Lake County were seemed to be a big news. It looks like it's right now it's all in the city of Gary, huh?
It's confusion.
It sounds like for sure. One of the other stories I know, Greg, that you put in the paper also dealt with the Common Council in Gary, and it talks about trying to deal with a library board member who they're not real happy with.
Yes, the Gary Library Board has seven members, one of whom is picked by the mayor, one of whom is picked by the council, Two were picked by the Lake County Council, and three others by the, I don't know, the Gary School Corporation. I don't know how I should describe it now. By the schools, you know, by the people who are running the schools. Anyway, the county council was displeased with their representative, who was a woman named Edna Laurent. Mm-hmm. She was appointed to the position back in 2016 for a four-year term. This week, they officially let her go. And they are now taking applications for anyone interested in serving on the library board. You have until April 20th to get in your resume if you're interested for a non-paying position. Yeah. They claim some members of the council contend that Edna Laurent was not showing up for meetings. She was not filing the written reports that she's supposed to file with the council to keep them officially informed of what the library board is doing. However, there are other people who claim this is more partisan politics. The one member of the council who actually was the one who originally recommended Edna Laurent contends that maybe they're just trying to mess with her a little bit.
Yeah.
Talking about LaVita Sparks Wade of the 6th District.
Yeah, apparently LaVita supports her, and maybe other people think that it was some kind of political move or some kind of maneuvering, I suppose, to get her on the board, on the library board to begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Of course, she contends that 2 years ago the rest of the council approved her suggestion, so you know, she claims that this person is not doing, Edna Laurent is not doing anything wrong, and in fact has even had, supposedly in the past few months, 5 deaths in her family, which explains the reason why her attendance has been a little lax lately.
Yeah.
And in fact, she didn't show up at a committee hearing last week where her fate was being discussed, probably because her husband is in the hospital.
Yeah.
So she's had a lot of complications.
Yeah, her life has been very much up in the air, it sounds like, and definitely in turmoil. So it looks like it may have been a nice idea to become a library board member, but she's not had much opportunity to be much of a library board member, I suppose.
Right. Of course, it's also pointed out by her supporters that she's very active within her community, a lot of the programs that try to neighborhood beautification, planting trees. Mostly around the old Lou Wallace school building. She's very active in trying to keep that place looking nice. She is supposedly a very active person in the community who maybe if she had more time would be able to throw more work into the library board.
Well, let's
But anyway, went ahead and replaced her. They officially let her go this week.
Well, who's to say that she might not get on some other City of Gary board in the future, I suppose, if the opportunity comes up, and she'll have more time to be able to serve on that one. You never know. So,
yes.
Well, we will find out what happens, of course, in the future as to who is going to be the next library board member to take her spot on the board here soon, and the Gary Common Council takes up that issue, too. We've been talking with Greg Tejeda, who covers news in the City of Gary for the Post-Tribune, and as always, Greg, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is Regionally Speaking, Reporters Roundtable Thursday here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Money Smart Week is coming up later this month here in April in conjunction with Financial Literacy Month. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson spoke with Money Smart Week Northwest Indiana's chairperson, Diane Rayome.
Thanks so much, Diane, for giving me this time. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I'm always thrilled to promote Money Smart.
This is a campaign, an educational campaign, so to speak. Tell me about Money Smart Week and when it is and what it's being done for.
Money Smart Week, actually, this year takes place from April 21st to the 28th. They chose April because April is Financial Literacy Month, and we all can do more with our finances than what we do. It's a Federal Reserve effort that is just that. It's an effort to promote financial literacy and financial capabilities that we all have to do more with our finances.
Is it common for people not to have financial literacy, and what does financial literacy mean?
Financial literacy. I really don't like the words financial literacy because that makes it sound like you're illiterate, but many of us could do much better with our finances than we do. And the way to do that is by learning and paying attention to what's going on in the world and what interest rates are. And a perfect example is if you stay away from these check cashing places, you can increase your income instantly because you are no longer paying the exorbitant interest rates. You don't have to pay for money orders. You can go to any financial institution and get, you know, a checking and a savings account and then hopefully go from there. But these check cashing places just rob you. And this is an effort to get people to move more into the financial stream of the world.
So what kind of topics will it cover? What's going to be taught within under the umbrella of Money Smart Week?
Under the umbrella of Money Smart Week, one of the first things that they have partnered with is the FDIC's effort, which is called the Bank On effort. We started with Bank On Northwest Indiana. Then we have moved into Bank On Northern Indiana Alliance. That is a collaboration of community partners in Elkhart, Lake, Porter, LaPorte, and St. Joseph counties. Northern Indiana Bank On's products and services are available to all individuals looking to improve their financial footprint. It typically, you need $100 to open an account, and if you have a Bank On account, you really only need $25. We have classes to help you figure out different ways to budget and to save money. We've even had insurance classes on how to lower your insurance premiums by doing things such as getting your auto and homeowners insurance from the same company. They offer you a discount at that point. We're working with community organizations such as Catholic Charities, Center for Workforce Innovations, Work One, Citizens Concerned for the Homeless, Housing Opportunities, Junior Achievement, Northern Indiana Commuter Transportation District, which is the South Shore Train, Northwest Indiana Community Action, Northwest Indiana Reinvestment Alliance, Purdue Extension, and Real Services out of South Bend. We're working very hard at putting together classes that help people with their finances and show them other ways, as I said before, to either save or decrease their income. Then we try to go in to offer even more classes and help them, and if they want, they could get a one-on-one with anybody. It is a wonderful effort. You hear so many bad stories about financial institutions, and in this one, we actually all play together really well in the same sandbox. Right now, those partners are First Source, Chase Bank, Centier, First Federal Savings, First Financial Bank, First Merchants Bank, First Midwest, First Savings Bank of Hegwisch, First State Bank, Lake City Bank, People's Bank, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Regional Federal Credit Union, and Woodforest National Bank. And we are always looking to partner with more.
What has been done in terms of in educating Northwest Indiana Hoosiers in financial literacy? Have you guys educated a lot of people, made great strides in doing so?
We continue to work at that to do all that we can. And now our latest effort is in the fall. We had a financial summit at Notre Dame. And this year, actually April 24th, we're having the second one. It's going to be at Indiana University Northwest in Gary. We're going to have people there to speak about all of this. We're going to have Q&A. We're going to have community conversations. Anything we can do to help the public become, we want the public to become more financially independent. If we can get that, we're going to make all of Northern Indiana a better place for all of us to live.
Now, if someone were to ask you, what is financial literacy, what would you tell them?
I would say that financial literacy is just financial education, and it depends. That's an all-encompassing term. Much like if it came to financial education in investing, I would need a ton of classes. I'm pretty good with budgeting and saving. But, you know, different people need different things, and they need different kinds of education in finances. I just recently went to a presentation on Medicare. That's another financial area.
So what do you think the financial literacy campaign, the Money Smart Week campaign, is important?
I think it's really important because we need to stress to everybody that no matter where you're at, it's possible for you to be financially in better shape than where you are right now. You just need education in different areas of the finance to learn how to do that.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your help. Is there anything else you wanted to add that maybe I haven't asked you about?
There's just one other thing. Also during Money Smart Week at Hammond Development Corporation, the hub of innovation on Holman Avenue, we have Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson coming to talk on Don't Be a Victim, How to Protect Yourself from Identity Theft, which also falls under the financial literacy umbrella, because if someone steals your identity, your finances are in trouble.
Really appreciate
Thank you.
It. You're listening to Regionally Speaking here on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed 50 years ago this week in Memphis, and on the same night in Indianapolis, Robert Kennedy made a speech that may have kept his capital quiet. Network Indiana's Chris Davis and his crew put together a special report on the momentous day 50 years ago.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Do they know about Martin Luther King?
We have left it up to you.
I have some very sad news for all of you.
Anybody here see my old friend Martin?
I still have a dream.
Can you tell me where he's gone?
It is a dream.
I just look around and he's gone.
My uncle often said we must learn to live together as brothers, and I'll add as sisters, or perish together as fools.
Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings.
The assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. was a kick in the gut to the country. But we didn't go down. We made it through 1968 and the rest of the 60s, and Indianapolis didn't have any riots. I'm Chris Davis. You're about to hear the story of the speech that might have kept those riots from happening.
What we need in the United States is not division.
Forget about the people. And so he really wanted everyone there to be made to feel cared for.
But his love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
You're listening to April 4th, Indiana, the story of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King.
Didn't you love the things that they stood for? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? And we'll be free.
The story of poverty and inequality in America goes back hundreds of years, but it reached a turning point in the 60s.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have
The push
grown.
Against black people being prevented from voting and legal segregation led to marches and demonstrations.
I would like now to introduce Bob Dylan.
From the back of a bush, couldn't let your effort blood. His finger fires the trigger to his name.
His I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
The March on Washington on August 28, 1963, featured one of America's most well-known speeches.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. of Atlanta had a dream that he had been talking about for years in Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi, the heart of segregation.
When we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every...
Evangelist Alveda King, director of civil rights for the Unborn for Priests for Life, is King's niece.
I believe he had an understanding of Acts 17:26 that says, of one blood, God made all people to live together on the face of the earth. And I believe that means we're not separate races. I believe my uncle understood that, and that he wants us to look at each other as human beings and resolve our differences peacefully.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty!
So I remember him as a peacemaker, certainly as a civil rights leader, and a man of God.
And his message of nonviolent resistance helped the push for new laws that ended public segregation, strengthened the right to vote for minorities, made fair housing a law, desegregated schools, and most importantly, all of it was driven by an attitude change across America.
I'm, at the moment, reassessing what I should do, as not only as a member of the Democratic Party, but more importantly, as a United States citizen.
What you want.
I am announcing today my candidacy for the presidency of the United States.
Robert Kennedy's decision to run for president was based largely on differences with President Lyndon Johnson over what to do about the war in Vietnam. He also ran on the platform of economic and racial justice.
I do not run for the presidency merely to oppose any man, but to propose new policy.
March 31st, 1968.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
It looked like Kennedy had a good shot at the presidency. He would be in Indiana just 5 days later. April 3rd, 1968.
Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
Martin Luther King was in Memphis to support black sanitation workers who had been on strike for a month.
So just as I say, we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around. We aren't going to let any injunction turn us around.
He had threats, including a bomb threat to his plane.
We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
April 4th, 1968. The prophetic speech from the day before had true words. King would not get there. He was shot on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel at 6:01 p.m. His last words were to Ben Branch, the musician scheduled to play in an event that night. He asked for, "Precious Lord, take my hand." In Indiana, Robert Kennedy was making campaign stops.
Bobby Kennedy's day started speaking at Ball State to an audience. Estimated between 10 and 12,000 students.
Angela Jackson Brown is an English instructor and playwright at Ball State.
He was at Ball State when he learned about what happened. Exciting to me to know that my university has that connection to this story.
Kennedy found out about the assassination before getting on a plane to Indianapolis on the way to a rally at what is now known as Kennedy King Park at 17th and Broadway. Mayor Richard Lugar and the chief of police urged Kennedy not to stay for the rally or make the speech that he had scratched out on his way to the park.
They know about Martin Luther King.
But he stepped up onto a flatbed truck and told the people the news and gave a speech that has inspired millions of people since.
Could you lower those signs, please?
And may have kept Indy from burning.
I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are.
and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. And he once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. Dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
If you were alive in 1968, you'd probably have seen the news about riots around the country, like the Watts riots of 1965 or the Detroit riots in 1967.
Black day in July, Motor City madness has touched the countryside.
They were responses to intense situations and often ended with gutted buildings, people dead and hurt, and cities wounded.
Motor City's burning and the flames are running wild.
But Kennedy's speech in Indianapolis may have been what kept people from burning buildings and tearing through the streets.
He cared about the people, and so he really wanted everyone there to be made to feel cared for, loved, and understood.
Angela Jackson Brown.
And he told his people, look, this is not about me anymore. This is about everyone in that audience.
Alveda King.
He had just gone down the same path that Martin Luther King Jr. Was on to encourage us to really learn how to communicate and to work together as Americans. I think that's very important. It was an important message then, and that message is still very important now.
So important that the Kennedy King Park Establishment Act was passed this year. It designates the Landmark for Peace Memorial as the Kennedy King National Commemorative Site at the park and makes it part of the U.S. Civil Rights Network. It also means it could be turned into a national park.
When other cities express their justified pain and anger and disenfranchisement with destruction, Robert Kennedy's calm voice of reason changed the hearts and minds of people who were feeling so much pain.
Representative Andre Carson.
Indianapolis was the only major city in America that did not burn in that season of pain and violent disruption.
These words will forever mark Senator Kennedy's grave in Arlington National Cemetery.
Senator Todd Young.
What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love.
Kennedy would also be the victim of an assassin just months later after winning the Indiana primary.
I want to first thank all of my friends and all of those who have involved themselves in this campaign in Indiana.
The shooting just days later in California.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible?
His legacy in the Hoosier state is one of appreciation.
Knowing our community the way I know our community, I do not believe violence would have happened.
And Angela Jackson Brown wrote a musical about that night called Dear Bobby.
But I do believe that Bobby Kennedy aided in keeping everyone calm and keeping everyone feeling as if they weren't alone in that moment.
In Indiana, Bobby Kennedy said it much as MLK did. Love and peace and true equality are the way. They both spoke of a brotherhood of man that may never be fully realized. But people with vision, like Kennedy and King, keep the dream alive and keep the spirit of lovers of peace alive by the awful grace of God.
Someday, soon, it's gonna be one day anybody here see my old friend Bobby. Can you tell me where he's gone?
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, and that means we check in with reporters around the region to find out about the stories that they have had in print and online. And let's turn now to Carol Carlson with the Post-Tribune to check on her stories of the week. Carol, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out first here. An interesting feature, I guess, that it's entitled the Comeback Church. And I have gone past this church before several times, and it's such a pretty one from the outside. And it's wonderful that this particular church in Gary's Miller neighborhood is still in business, so to speak, that they still have pastors on hand and parishioners is there too. Tell us about that.
It's a beautiful mid-century modern church, and was kind of nice to do a little heartwarming story for a change for Easter. And it's a church in the heart of Gary's Miller section, and it had, like many churches, fallen on some tough economic times, and the bishop of the diocese had gone to church members and told them the hard decision he was making to shut down the diocese. They were heartbroken, understandably, and talked amongst themselves and rallied themselves and asked the bishop for a second chance, and he in turn gave them a year of opportunity to turn their fortunes around, and they did it. So that was the nature of going back to that story.
I understand, too, that a name is very familiar to Catholic parishioners all across Northwest Indiana. In fact, the Bishop Emeritus, Dale Melchick, has taken over as the church's pastor.
Yes, Bishop Melchick, who had retired, lived in Miller and learned of the plight of the church and raised his hand and said, I'll volunteer to be their pastor. And he agreed to do so without a salary. They don't have to provide a rectory for him. He stayed in his home, and he turned out to be the leader that the church needed.
Now, what has the retired bishop been able to do since he's taken over as the pastor of St. Mary's of the Lake to be able to get the church to get towards this sustainability goal that they have?
One of the big things that a member mentioned was his positivity, and she said he was the church of yes. And he came in with not so much the thought on them and their plight, but he encouraged them to reach out to their community and offer services to their community and some of the folks in the community who are falling on hard times. And they established a food pantry. That was one of the first things they did. And I believe they're up to feeding 200 to 300 people a month now. It's about 80 families. So that's kind of brought the folks in the church together for a common cause. And he's encouraged relationships with other churches in Hobart, including the Bethel Lutheran Church and the Temple Israel. They've done a number of outreach projects in the community, and he has kind of been that force that is behind a lot of these initiatives.
I understand that the church was pretty much in debt, and they've managed to be able to dig themselves out of that, and they're on, as you say, the way to some very positive things, I understand.
Yeah, they got out of debt fairly quickly. They owed the diocese about $120,000. Now they even have a little cushion, and they've been able to pave a parking lot that adjoins their school, which they rent out to Head Start program.
Mm-hmm. When you had a chance to talk with everybody involved, what impression did you get that the parishioners I guess they were so devastated when the word first came out that the church was going to close that they must have realized that we just cannot let this happen?
That's kind of what they thought. I mean, one of them had a wedding planned. for a few months down the road, and she, you know, obviously she was impacted, and she grew up in the church. Her father and mother had raised her in that church, and it was their church as well. And she was one of the people instrumental in turning things around. And they, under the bishop, they also did this amazing door-to-door outreach. They sent parishioners into Miller, Etna, Glen Ryan, sections of Gary, and just knocked on doors. And while they didn't get a lot of members through that, they did get some of their old members back. Mm-hmm. And one of the leaders said that it gave them a lot of respect in the community, that they were willing to do this to save
That's
the
great.
Church.
That's great. We're talking with Carol Carlson with the Post Tribune about the stories that she's worked on through this week. And several of the stories involved the Gary Community Schools, and one in particular, which is, I guess, a testament to the fact that if you work hard and you save your money and don't spend it on things that you don't necessarily do, you might have enough money to be able to do something improving in the system. And I guess that was the case here. The state had their recent meeting, and it involved the Gary School Corporation's plans for to transporting students next year, and it's turned out pretty well, I understand.
Yes, they did receive the approval from the state to enter into a new transportation contract with actually the same busing vendor, Illinois Central. And because they have paid their bills on time and are starting to establish a good record of paying their bills, they were able to save about $1 million on the life of the three-year contract.
That's great. That's great. Now, I understand, too, in this new contract that Illinois Central is going to do more than just transport students. They're going to provide, I guess, some new buses and some other things, too.
Yes, they agreed to provide new buses, so the Gary kids will be riding in style, I guess, next year. And brand new buses, and they are also going to provide about $75,000 in services that we're not quite sure what that's going to be for, but that's another one of the incentives that they tossed into the contract.
And looking into this, and in turn, the contract that was approved by the state that the school district is entering into and under the special leadership that they have here with the emergency manager, Dr. Peggy Hinckley, how is this going to, in fact, the route that the buses are going to have to take? Because we know that it's a very widespread district here. Students are just about all over the city these days. And with the change in the fact there'll only be one high school, and it's going to be a little further away for some than others, it's going to be a longer ride in the bus, I would imagine.
Yeah, they're saying that services won't be diminished. They will save some money because they won't be running at quite as many routes because they'll only have one high school to mm-hmm. move students to from all over the city, obviously. But they are also opening a citywide middle school in the Miller section, so there will be busing, sort of crosstown busing. Students from the Miller area will be heading over to Westside for high school, and mm-hmm. students in the Westside area will be coming to Miller for their middle school. So it'll be a pretty large number of students being bused, but they're saying that the routes will be slightly less because they'll have fewer students.
One of the stories that you also had in the Post Tribune online and in print this week is an update on former school superintendent, Dr. Cheryl Pruitt. And tell us how she's gotten involved in the news again now and what came about in a decision made by Indianapolis this week.
Yes, the Attorney General's office has been meeting with former Superintendent Pruitt in regard to a bonus that the school board gave her back in 2016. And it came about because the State Board of Accounts did a special audit on that time period and could not find any substantiation in her contract that would tell them what that bonus was for. They said they couldn't even find anything representing a bonus mm-hmm. and what she would have to do to earn it. So they flagged it and turned it over to the Attorney General's office. And that was last October, I believe. And the past few months have been negotiations between Cheryl Pruitt's attorneys and the Attorney General's office. And they did come up with a settlement. She has to pay the entire amount back, though.
I know that there's been some reaction to that decision from Attorney General in Indianapolis about this. Some of the school board members, I guess, relieved, and some are not happy, I would imagine.
Yes. Some of the school board members maintain that she did earn the bonus, and they maintain that there was reference to a bonus in the contract. But the state held their ground and said there was no specific mention of what she would have to do to earn that bonus. And mm-hmm. as far as they were concerned, she was not entitled to receive it.
I understand, too, that even State Representative Charlie Brown has had a chance to speak out about this, too.
Yeah, he feels that this will put the issue behind the school district now and take a broader step to show state officials that Gary is once again paying this debt. At least it will be covered.
And finally, Carol, one of the stories that you had has been, in fact, in the newspaper here in recent days is looking into the Maryville Community School Corporation. We know that they are looking for a new leader, and it looks like they're just about ready to name one.
Yeah, they are. Their former superintendent, Jeff Studebaker, left last October, and he was only around for 19 months. And they brought back Michael Berta, who is a retired superintendent, and he had spent a lot of time at Merrillville as its assistant superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
And they have since begun the search, and I believe they have it narrowed down to two or three candidates. and I was told on Tuesday that they expect to name a new superintendent within the month.
Mm-hmm. And I know that that was one of the things I think they're still trying to figure out. Has anybody said anything in particular as to why Superintendent Studebaker left?
I believe he had some personal family issues going on. He never did move to Northwest Indiana. His mm-hmm. wife is a professor at Purdue University. And I'm not quite sure what the family dynamic was, but they did not make the move here. So he was driving back and forth every day.
Oh, geez.
And it just wasn't working out.
Yeah. I understand they had some other business that was taken up by the Maryville Community School Board here too. Some people are leaving, and some other people, I guess, who are going to be some programs, I should say, rather than people, are going to be expanded here in the future. Tell us a little bit here about one of the elementary school teachers leaving.
Yeah, they're losing Falk Elementary principal Kathy Sapka. She's been there for a number of years, and she was their leader when they received the National Blue Ribbon Award back in 2013, which is, I don't know, I guess in school circles it might be the highest honor a school
yeah.
as a whole can receive. And the school has been an A-rated school for a number of years under her leadership, so they were very sorry to see her go. She is headed to Dyer, where she will become the principal at Protsman Elementary in the Lake Central system.
Well, she's lucky. She gets to be in a nice, fancy building now, too. That was one of the buildings that was a plan to be remodeled or actually
yeah.
replaced with a new physical facility there. So that's nice to hear, too. Carol Carlson is covering stories, a lot of them about education, for the Post Tribune. And as always, Carol, thank you for spending time with us today here on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Okay.
And thank you all for listening to Regionally Speaking today and this week. I'm Chris Nolte, and our thanks once again to Carol Carlson with the Post Tribune and her colleague Greg Tejeda, covering stories out of Gary, and Sharon Jackson from Lakeshore Public Radio, who's had the interesting conversation here about Smart Money Week coming up here later in April. That's it for today, and I hope you'll join us next week for Regionally Speaking.